Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, I've owned over my lifetime three homes, and in virtually every one of them, I did some remodeling at one point or another. Some quite a bit more expensive projects than others. And we thought it'd be a good idea to talk today about this whole area of home remodeling with our guest today, Chad Spate. Great to have him back. Owner of Chad's Design Build. So we'll look at maybe some improvements for your home. What do you have? What gives you the biggest bang for the buck? Let me put it that way. And there's some research on this, some recent research that I think you're going to find interesting. And questions for him about remodeling or repair, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chad Spate, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
Well, let's talk about, you've got some numbers for us. Where do they come from, and are they pretty reliable?
Sure. Well, when we talk about what a remodeling project costs, I always like to use the analogy, and what does a car cost? You know, if you're talking about a bathroom or a kitchen or a car, there's a wide range of potential cost associated with that. And a lot of the time it comes down primarily to what you pick. So obviously, if you're picking a car, you pick the model, the make, and all the features, and that's going to translate into a cost. And remodeling is a little more complicated and different because, one, there are a lot more options that you can throw into the mix.
Yeah.
And then because you're taking an existing home and altering it, the pre-existing conditions, if you will, of the home itself will be a big determining factor in what cost there is. So we live in a world with the internet and all these home improvement shows on television, and there is a lot of conflicting information out there about what one would expect to pay for a typical project. So there is one source that we like to use. I share this survey with clients often when I'm talking to them about their project. It's called the Cost Versus Value Report, and it's something that is actually paid for in part by the National Association of Realtors, because they wanted to know, to be able to tell people that are selling homes, you know, what might you expect to pay for certain improvements, and what do those improvements do to the value of your home. Remodeling Magazine, which is a trade industry magazine that's partially kind of funded or supported by NARI, the National Remodeling Association. They publish this report every year, and it's available online. Our listeners can go to the website Cost Versus Value, and that's costvsvalue.com, and actually see these numbers. And it's fascinating, and a lot of people are shocked by what things really cost.
Yeah.
But as you alluded to earlier, you're, you know, well aware of what some of these projects can cost from the projects you've done in your home, working with professional remodelers. And I find that these numbers are at least realistic. Every project is different. These are average numbers, so it's easier to talk about the expectations of a given client and then what they're likely to end up having to spend to get whatever it is they want.
We have, you know, Carol in Gutenberg, Iowa has a question about cost remodeling. And so let's just take that call.
Great.
Carol, hi.
Okay, thank you, Larry. We're looking at a kitchen remodel. My husband's going to be retiring in a couple of years, and he said, okay, that we think we can do it then. We've got a bunch of money put away. But the main question is, our kitchen is a one-story. The home is probably 100 or more years old. The main part of the house is two stories, and then if you can envision this, the kitchen is just one, and the part of the roof slopes to the south, and then there's an enclosed porch, which from the kitchen you have to step down into that enclosed porch. And we're looking at incorporating the porch and the kitchen together, but my husband thinks that maybe the, well, we just don't know which way to go with this because he said we're going to have to deal with a different roof line.
Right. And so the porch is probably not heated, correct?
It's not.
Right. So a lot of times and of course every home and every project is unique, but just based on your description, my expectation is that that porch area will likely get rebuilt. It's possible that the roof line could be saved, but that it probably needs a proper foundation under it if you're going to make that part of your heated home. And you could entertain the notion of enclosing it perhaps without doing that and insulating the floor depending on the condition of the space, but there will be a lot of cost associated with that to do it properly that may end up justifying just starting over with that space.
You know, if you look at kitchen, I was looking on the cost value estimates on major kitchen remodels. Mm-hmm. And it looks to me like if you're thinking about selling, you know, okay, let's remodel and then turn around and sell it. What is it about? A little better than what you spend, you would get back on a resale a little bit better than half of what you spent.
That's correct. And one of the reasons we find that historically renovations end up adding about 70% of what they cost to do to the value of a home. In the case of the kitchens here, the current data, they're suggesting it's the high 50 percentage mark. And one of the reasons for that is if a house has a kitchen and you tear that kitchen entirely out and put in a new one, you know, you haven't added a new kitchen to the home. You've just improved the old kitchen.
Yeah.
And so it's reasonable to, if you think about it, that all the time that is taken tearing out the old and disposing of it, you know, that's a cost that you don't have when you're building a new home. And then if you have, in the case of Carol, who has a 100-year-old home that she's looking to renovate, all of the electrical systems probably need to be brought up to code.
Yeah.
There are other issues that may have to be addressed as part of code compliance. There may be hazardous material in the existing kitchen. It's very likely that there could be asbestos flooring that should be removed, and that'll have to be professionally removed, mitigated. And, of course, that's even more expensive than just the typical tearing out of material. So all of these sorts of costs play into why you're not going to get a full return on your investment. But of course, the flip side is typically you remodel a home because you want to enjoy an improved home.
Yeah.
Now, if you're looking
that sounds like what Carol wanted.
Absolutely. Yes. And so, you know, so what might she end up spending? You know, according to the survey here, the typical no frills full kitchen remodel where everything is torn out and from, you know, the walls and the floors to the cabinets and countertops, everything is new. You might expect to spend around $65,000 with rather kind of budget-minded fixtures and appliances. And the average cost of an upscale or high-end kitchen renovation is twice that. It's over $120,000. You know, and I have to tell you, I mean, we very rarely have had a kitchen remodel that tops $100,000, unless you're adding on to the home.
Yeah.
And then you might expect to spend every bit of $150,000, $200,000 adding on to the home and finishing off that renovated kitchen space. And of course, you can spend more money.
And as you were saying earlier, you know, it's, to some extent, it depends on what's already there. If you can not get rid of the kitchen cabinets, instead paint them and put new handles or something on, that's a huge savings right there, as examples.
That's a great point, Larry. And one of the projects that they actually give an average price on is something called a minor kitchen remodel. And that actually envisions keeping the cabinets and maybe refacing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's about typically a $20,000 undertaking.
Yeah.
The one thing you don't get to do with the minor kitchen remodel is you don't get to rearrange the kitchen.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a very functional layout, you're not going to solve that problem necessarily.
Interesting. Thanks again, Carol. Mary in Ashland had something, a cost associated with a shower surround, I think.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have a bathtub with a shower surround that hits the wall in the bathtub, and it's starting to develop mold. And I don't want to deal with that, and I'm wondering what it would cost to take out the bathtub and bring in a new bathtub or bring in a total surround that doesn't have any cracks in it?
Yeah,
sure. Great question. Well, so one of the issues will be the actual materials that you end up choosing. And the most affordable way to convert an old tub into either a shower or another tub with a shower around it is to use a modular system. And when you build a new home, those are one-piece units. But when we remodel a home, we end up having to purchase modular units that essentially get brought in pieces and assembled in the bathroom and installed. And, you know, on the low end, you might be able to tear out and replace the entire tub shower area of a little bit below $10,000, but you could easily spend three times that if you were to go with all tiled surfaces or, you know, you could integrate a lot of features and a lot of high-end materials into that. Typically, though, just for example, and again referencing this report, the typical bathroom remodel comes in around $20,000 with no frills, and it can be three times that, a little over $60,000, when it's upscale. And so we would expect that tub shower unit to probably contribute anywhere from a third to a half of the cost of a bathroom remodel, because often there are features there, like a nice door.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we put in a shower stall that has no curb. So literally if water gets out beyond the shower, it flows right back into the shower and goes down the drain. This is a very popular feature now. It's for accessibility and safety and aging in place. Very popular to put in these no curb or curbless showers.
Lots to think about there. And the anywhere from $10,000 to $40,000, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, probably 25 is about the limit that we've seen. But every time I give a high end, someone comes along and shows me how to spend more. So
okay, there you go, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. And Jim in La Crosse, you've got something to add here, I believe. Hi, Jim.
Hi. You know, this is right along the lines of talking about a bathroom. I was just interested in your opinions about when I just did a big bath remodel, I was lucky to have a bedroom to convert to another bathroom where I did a stand-up shower where there was no curb. But seeing as I was putting in all new flooring and I used tile, I went with a heated floor. And along those lines, too, I splurged a tiny bit because bath fixtures themselves, like towel racks, are so expensive. I went with a heated towel bar, and those are two of the best things I have ever done in my life in home remodeling for a house that, you know, an older home that is a little cooler, and in the climate that I live in La Crosse, that warm floor, I can't even tell people how nice that is to have, and a heated towel bar, a simple thing like that for around $225. If you plan that in your remodel with an electrical connection, you could spend that much on towel bars themselves.
Yeah.
And I'd just like to know what you think about that.
Well, Jim, thanks for your call. I mean, those are great features. It's not unusual for us to incorporate heated floors into bath remodels these days. It's very popular. You know, most most people aren't aware necessarily that our perception of how warm or cold it is at any given moment is very much determined by our feet. And yeah. Particularly if you're walking around barefoot, and if you're walking on a colder tile floor, that gives you the perception of a much colder room than you may actually be standing in. And no one wants to feel cold or chilled when they're in the bathroom. So heating that floor has a major impact on our comfort perception in the space, and it is really nice. I've remodeled a few of my own bathrooms over the years, but only once have I put in a heated floor, and I just recently sold that home, and I really miss it. I can't wait to put a heated floor into my new condo. But the heated towel bar is something that we've done on a few projects, and that too, I mean, you end up, you're heating the room. It's essentially an electric radiator that also is going to heat your towel, and it's also going to help to dry out your towel when you're done using it. So it's an amazing feature. We've done them for clients. I haven't yet gone there myself, but I look forward to the day when I might have one of those too. They're great.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, about home improvement and renovation costs. Again, that number 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Dave Potratz, our engineer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home renovation and repair and the costs of doing some renovation for your home with our guest today, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Designed Build, works out of Monona in the Madison areas. It's always great to have him come by. Comes by every couple of months, as a matter of fact. We have been looking at some of the projected costs and sort of working that into your questions. And that's been kind of fun. Alan in New Auburn has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Our son and his wife they live in Minnesota. They're contemplating buying a geodesic dome house. It's in a rural location, and I'm a bit skeptical. I think they're neat. I understand why they like the house. We haven't actually physically seen the house yet. My wife and I were going to go up and view it sometime next week. Do you have any general concerns or things they should look out for, particularly in a geodesic? We've made a list of things that are standard things, like make sure that you check the well and all the kinds of things you would do normally. But for instance, if they had to replace a roof or other parts of a geodesic, is it difficult to find people that would work on them? What are some of the pitfalls or red flags that you could think of that in your experience or whatever that you could maybe share?
Sure.
Great. Well, those are some great questions. And I think you've actually alluded to some of the concerns that I would have right out of the gate, because you're not going to find many people that have experience with homes like that. And I personally do not have any experience working on them. I've walked into a few. They're cool, but they are interesting. But because they're very unique, there will be things about them that are more expensive to do just by virtue of their uniqueness. And so I know there are a couple in Madison that actually are partially built into a hillside, and have a green roof on them, for example. And that can be a great thing if it's done properly. But a lot of the homes that were built into hillsides back in the 70s and since, if the waterproofing and the moisture proofing isn't done properly, they can be very damp homes. Now, this may be a fully above grade geodesic structure, and then the issue would be, what are the exterior treatments on it? What condition are they in? How well is humidity dealt with? Sometimes these homes have a lot of glass in them, and that can be expensive to keep comfortable. But, every little detail is going to impact the cost of maintaining that home, And if it was done well, then it may be that it's a great investment. So,
and I would, I would ask him to look around and see what builders or what remodelers actually exist in the neighborhood or in the area who would be able to work on a home like that. I mean, you'd want to know.
Correct. And then
there's nobody.
Right. And I imagine, too, if they're looking at, you know, still in the process of considering making an offer, or maybe they've made an offer and hopefully they're going to have a good inspection, I would go out of my way to find an inspector who has some knowledge of these, of things that are unique to the home, and try to get as much, you know, good information up front so that they can potentially adjust the offer in purchasing it, or just anticipate and plan for some of the maintenance costs that might be unique to that building.
So there you go. You're going to have to let us know, Alan, in a couple of months when Chad's back, whether or not they bought this place, or if they didn't, why they didn't. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Jeff in Madison's been waiting a bit. Let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Another porch question. We have an enclosed porch in the front of the house, old wooden house. It does have rigid foam tacked to the undersides of the joists in the crawl space, although the porch is cold because it doesn't have an actual foundation. It is covered. The crawl space obviously is enclosed, but it's still cold. I'm wondering, the wooden porch floor is sharply sloped. The street side is a good 3.5 to 4 inches below the house side on a, it's an 8-foot wide porch, so it's quite a slope, and I'd like to level the floor. I'm thinking of doing this with graduated 2x1s, then 2x2s, then 2x4 on the downside strips, and then on top of that plywood, and on top of that hopefully carpeting wood. My question is this, between that plywood and the current wood floor that those graduated strips would be nailed to or screwed to, Can I put insulation there? Is that a bad idea? Is there a type of insulation, spray foam or batting or something that would work well, or does that immediately suggest moisture issues? There you go.
Great. Well, thanks for the call. Those are great questions. So one thing that you might consider doing is to talk to one of the local roofing supply distributors in Madison, and see if you might be able to acquire some foam board that would typically be put down as an underlayment on a flat roof that would give it a pitch, and you could use that foam as a base for your new plywood, so that you would actually have continuous foam put down over the old sloped floor that would actually, you know, go opposite the slope so that it makes it level. You may not be able to get exactly the angled slope that you're looking for. They do have a few different options for the angle on those kind of wedge foam boards, but that would be a way to, you know, maximize the foam that you're inserting under the floor. The only thing you really need to worry about as far as moisture goes on that floor, if the floor itself is not getting wet because it is, in fact, an enclosed porch, you are obviously going to have to be careful, like any interior space, that it not get wet in the future once you do the things that you're planning to do. But assuming that that's the case, you know, you can be comfortable having one vapor barrier in this assembly and having solid foam or insulation in that floor. One problem we often see with the foam board that's tacked up underneath a porch like that is, just like a lot of times with fiberglass bat insulation, it's kind of installed haphazardly. Nothing has necessarily been done to air seal the space. So there's this appearance of an insulating layer, but it is not contiguous. It is not air sealed. And if that's the case, you might want to address that as well. If the cavities between the joists are not insulated, you could certainly do that to benefit the R value of that floor. So hopefully those suggestions are helpful.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Terry in Milwaukee will turn to you. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good morning, Chad. Good morning, Larry. I was listening to some of the comments about remodeling a bathroom. Not too long ago, I remodeled my bathrooms, and I not only focused on the goal of pleasing my wife, but also making it a bit easier for somebody if they decided to buy my house in the future. So I gutted everything out, bathtub, sink, vanity, and then I prepared the floor for tiling with quarter-inch Hardiebacker board, including the wall 4 feet up. And I tiled everything from wall to wall, including up 4 feet around the entire bathroom, so that all the tiling was done throughout the entire bathroom. Then I went and purchased a clawfoot bathtub, which is easy to install and very easy to remove if somebody doesn't like it. And I went with a dresser-type bathroom vanity, a two-bowl vanity that came with the sinks, the faucet, everything installed. So it was just a matter of bringing the vanity into the bathroom, setting it in place, having a plumber do the final hookup. Same thing with the clawfoot bathtub. And the toilet's not a big deal to install. I went with a Kohler toilet. And now if somebody in the future wants to buy the house and they're not particularly crazy about my vanity in the bathroom or the clawfoot tub, they can easily take those out and replace those with their choice of vanity, with their choice of bathtub. And it really reduced the cost. And there are some of the chain stores around town, both here in Milwaukee and Madison and other areas, they have classes that they can have you attend to learn how to do tile work. And you can buy inexpensive tile at the chain stores, including places like Hobo. And you can really drive that cost down with just a little forethought and maybe a few friends that have some skills in some of those areas.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so those are some great comments, Terry. Thanks for your call. It's certainly true that the remodeling industry is a unique industry because, first off, we have a lot of homeowners like yourself that do projects, and that's great. I mean, that's how I started as a teenager, was remodeling the family home. And there are a lot of things that we can do if we're handy and are willing to learn what the best techniques are. And then, of course, there are a lot of different places you can purchase materials, and there are a lot of places that manufacture materials. And, of course, like with so many things, a lot of materials now are being imported from China and other places. And this gives, since we're talking about cost today, I did want to just make a comment that,
yeah.
We've seen a very, very significant impact on the cost of materials over the last year from all of the concern and all of the actual tariffs that have been imposed.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So that's been something that has made it a little bit harder for us to predict what our material costs are going to be as a builder. And of course, as a consumer, if you go into a given store and you're looking to purchase it, well, the cost is what it is. But we do know that those costs have been fluctuating quite a bit. Those are some great comments. And I think the idea of having a modular bathroom like that, where you can, maybe remove the parts, that's a thoughtful way for you to both have what you wanted and then to be able to potentially sell the home in the future speak to those benefits.
Hmm.
It's important to note that you put in the things that you wanted to have in your bathroom, and we're always looking to accommodate the wants and needs of our clients as well. And a lot of times we're tearing out clawfoot tubs because people don't want to have that that tub. They don't often take a tub and use it, and they're taking a shower, and it's very awkward to turn a clawfoot tub into a space where you take a shower because it's surrounded on all four sides by a shower curtain typically. But if it's what you want, then that's great. It sounds like you had a great project.
As Terry was talking, I was thinking about the home that I'm living in now that I purchased, and the remember talking to the owner who had spent a fair amount of money on the bathroom and his own time and was quite proud of it. And I did not tell him that that was going to be completely gone as soon as the house was purchased. So right. Sometimes, and it was expensive. The point was, I mean, it had to all be torn out, to be perfectly honest, and it would have been easier if it had been something like what Terry suggested here.
Right, right.
Thanks again for that call. Kent in Reedstown, your turn.
Yeah, hi. I'm wondering about soundproofing a first floor ceiling when you have a living space above it. What is the best way to do that with, I got I-joist beams? And then also, what is the maximum or the best attic insulation? How thick or how many inches of cellulose blown in is ideal?
Okay. Great. Those are some good questions, Kent. Well, for soundproofing, there are a variety of things that can be done between floors on a home, keeping in mind that there are certain things that will not be easy to retrofit. For example, if the structure itself makes a lot of noise when someone upstairs is walking on the floor. But if you have the headroom for it, you can add a few layers of basically dead space between the existing ceiling, and you can put in furring strips, or you can put in little clips that are designed specifically to hang a new layer of drywall below whatever the existing layer is, and it helps to separate that layer of drywall structurally from the floor with those clips. And that airspace becomes a place where sound will bounce around in an airspace. So wherever we can create pockets of air, we get very effective soundproofing. It's possible that dense packing the ceiling between the two floors might be a way to also, fill up that cavity where now like sound is bouncing around and you're hearing it, but you're going to create a smaller cavity at the top once that settles a little, and that will be there to help insulate sound as well as heat transfer between the floors. There are products that are actually sound absorbing products, which would be taking things to the next level. There's drywall that is specifically designed to absorb sound. There are other materials that can be integrated into the assembly, which are there to absorb sound. And so you might consider something like that as well. Now, speaking about insulation up in the attic, if you have unlimited space up there, ideally you'd want to get an R60 layer at the top of the house there. That would be kind of best practice typically. And if it is well air sealed up at the ceiling level, then you can put in cellulose up there in the attic. And that can be very effective. Typically, you're going to get an R value. Let me think about this. It's going to be about, you get an R19 and 5 inches. So, you're going to need about 15, 18 inches of cellulose to get up to that R60. But there are other materials too. There's a closed cell foam. If you have limited space and you need to maximize your R value within that space, and maybe you don't have good air sealing and you'd like to achieve that when you insulate, the closed cell foam is a great way to go. So has that answered your questions?
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
You bet. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments as we visit with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Brian in Caledonia emailed to say he's getting his father's home ready to sell. There's low water pressure. It's city water and only 900 square feet with one bath. It was built in the 50s. Thinking about changing the galvanized pipes to PVC. Is there something short of new supplies to improve the pressure?
Okay, well, those are some great questions. So a little bit of assessment will need to be done to figure that out, but it would be common to find that those galvanized pipes have quite a bit of calcification on the inside of the pipe, and it's essentially like hardening of the arteries in our bodies. There are a lot of minerals in the water in Wisconsin, and hard water leads to that problem. So chances are that you will fix the problem by replacing the pipes, and I'm not aware of a simple and cost-effective way to undo that buildup.
No.
You know, it often just makes sense to go ahead. I mean, these would be, you know, it's a roughly a 60 to 70 year old plumbing system, and so it probably won't be too costly to just have that stuff redone, and you're going to fix the problem and have something better to sell.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Chad Spade, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. We're taking a look at home improvement renovation and the costs associated with those renovations with our guest today, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Designed Build. Great to have him back, and thanks so much for joining in. Chad, as I looked at the cost value sheet that you had given us, there's only one that I see where the resale value actually exceeds the cost of putting it in, and that's for manufactured stone veneer.
Right. Yeah, that's I don't know. You know, the funny thing is I mean, these numbers don't change a lot, but they do change a little bit, and there are certain things, I guess, that it's probably the case that maybe vinyl siding is being taken off and that stone veneer is being put on. So you know, and certainly when you walk up to a home that has some sort of masonry, that's an impressive thing to see, and it does add value. So much of value in real estate is tied to perception more than reality. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of the things that will determine whether or not something lasts a long time are not factored in to the, you know, real estate value per se. You know, it's just simply doing the math, you know, how many bedrooms, how much square footage above grade, is there finished lower grade, but that's different value.
And the outside of a house, I think, in just in terms of resale, if the house looks nice and the lawn looks nice, that's going to be, that's huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, that speaks to perception. And when you come up, you know, and if you see that the masonry, even if it's just an accent, you know, a lot of times the masonry is just put in like a halfway up, you know, 3 feet up the wall. And
Well, let's take another call. Jill in Racine has a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Chad and Larry.
Hi.
We still have batting insulation. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about the attic before, and you suggested closed cell foam. Do we need to, do we put it on the floor or on the angle of the roof?
Great question. So I want to step back a moment and say that there's nothing necessarily wrong with the batting that you have up in your attic. And if you have concerns about, you know, how high your utility bills are, or the comfort in your home, I would be remiss if I did not mention how important it is to have a home performance energy audit done to give you some good information on how leaky your home is and how much heat transfer you're actually getting in your walls and up in your attic, and whether or not you really should be concerned about it, because that going through that process does two things that are really helpful for you as the homeowner. One, it's going to give you some great information about how well your house is performing and where it has areas that it could be improved. And then if you decide to make those improvements, you're going to be eligible for some rewards if you have a qualified contractor perform those improvements. So it's worth doing either way. Even if you're going to do it yourself, it's good to have that professional advice. You're going to pay anywhere from $300 to $500 for that assessment. And it's money well spent. So then speaking to what you might do additionally, if you plan to use or you do use your attic for storage, then putting foam right up on the roof deck, you know, applying it from underneath into the rafter cavities can be a great way to basically prevent that heat from escaping the home in the winter as easily as it does now. It'll make the attic a more conditioned space. And then in the summertime, it will keep it cooler. So that can be a great way to go. But if you really just want, if you don't use the attic at all for anything, then you want to find out if your air sealing is good, if you're not losing a lot of heat into the attic. And then if it is good, then you could benefit from just adding additional cellulose on top of the existing batting. But if we find that there are a lot of leaks and a lot of heat is escaping up into the attic, it might be worth taking all that out, air sealing it, and then adding a new thicker layer of insulating material, you know, directly on top of the ceiling.
And some of that in a home inspection, as you were talking about, and where would Jill go to get that information or to find out who could help her?
So the Wisconsin Focus on Energy website would be the place to go. And if you just Google Focus on Energy, that site will pop up and they will list home performance evaluators in your area by zip code or by county. And you should be able to find someone to help guide you.
And Jill is in Racine. There are sure to be people in Racine that can do that.
Absolutely.
So there you go, Jill. Thank you so much for calling.
Good luck.
Noah in Toma, your turn. Hi, Noah.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a question with my foundation sinking. I have a house that's over 100 years old, and of course the foundation has settled, but my flooring in the center is bowing upwards. It has the old, original, like, wood posts in the basement, and I was wondering if it would be an easy way or a good idea if a person were to take those out by putting in, like, the adjustable ones to lower the floor over time.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. So the one thing that I would want to know as you're troubleshooting this is to figure out what's actually moving, because there could be one of two things going on. The foundation walls on the perimeter could be settling, and it could be that the places where the posts were put in the middle are stable. That's one possible explanation for what's going on, and that's not an unlikely thing given the age of the home. But it could also be that the ground has a lot of moisture in it, and that the posts themselves have done some heaving, or something else might be going on there. And so it would be good to know what is actually causing the problem, but it could be your idea of putting in that adjustable post would allow you to tweak this a little bit. The other comment I would make and concern I would have is we're always very cautious when we go moving around floors in homes, because something that you're going to have to think about really carefully is that there are partition walls that are probably load-bearing in the middle of your home that are bearing on those central posts. And so it is not a, you know, a light matter to just kind of, you know, start playing around with. And so we always are going to look carefully at those issues and make sure that we're not causing new problems by solving the problem right now you have with your floor. But it's certainly possible that if you could replace the old post with one of those adjustable posts, and I mean, whenever we do any leveling of old structures, we do it very slowly over a number of days, because the structure itself needs to be able to slowly adjust to those changes. Anything that you do abruptly is likely to cause other structural distortions. And again, you're not able to adjust what you're doing thoughtfully if you try to change it quickly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Would like a normal contractor be somebody that would be able to come in and do this, or are there like specialists out there for it?
That's a great question, because I think that there are some contractors that, I mean, you would want to find contractors that have some experience with the particular issue that you're trying to address, because it's certainly not something that I would say the typical contractor would want to be involved with. I think you're going to want to find someone that, you know, has experience with older homes and with these sorts of settling issues, and would be able to make sure that everything is being done with proper engineering and consideration of the factors.
There you go. Speaking of floors, what about the wood floors from a home that was probably 100 years old? Nice wood flooring, but they creak when you step on them. And is there a way to eliminate at least some of that?
Right. So that is a really challenging problem to fix, but there are different things that we and that a contractor or even a homeowner might consider doing. If you have access from the underside to the floor, so if it's a first floor and you have an unfinished basement, sometimes things can be done very carefully with glue and screws to essentially pull the flooring down and reduce its movement. Squeaks are typically caused by the nails that are nailed in through the tongue of a hardwood floor. And when the floor just ever so slightly moves up and down, the friction of that nail rubbing the wood is what's causing the squeaking. And so you have to be able to reduce that movement. And often that's, you know, either pulling that floor down and preventing it from the little bit of lift that it naturally is doing, and then you step on it and it falls back down to the subfloor and you hear the squeak. If you can either, you know, fill that with some sort of adhesive from underneath, or put in a screw. But of course, you have to be very careful that whatever you do does not end up coming through the floor.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have the proper sizing. And it often is a multiple person task because you also have to hold the flooring down from above when you're fastening it.
Boy.
So it's tricky, but we've actually, you know, it would be unusual to eliminate all of the squeaks in an old floor, but you can definitely improve it if you have access.
And I could see the problems with, let's say, a second story.
That's very challenging, yes.
I would think that would be really expensive.
Well, or you're approaching it from above and you're filling holes, you know, and so that has its own issues, but you still maybe can make some improvements and
make it a little better at least.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. Chad Spade, our guest. He is the owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison and comes by every couple of months to talk with us. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. If you have a question for him, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org or give a call. The number 1-800-642-1234. And we will be back with Chad Spate right after a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us. So you stay with us. Have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at home improvement today with one of our regular guests, Chad Spade. He owns Chad's Design Build, works out of Monona and Madison. Always great to have him come by. Questions for him, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org or give a call at 1-800-642-1234. And Chad, we have lots of callers online, so let's take a call from Carol in Tofte, Minnesota next. Hi, Carol. Thank you for calling.
Yes.
What can we do for you?
My question is, I'd like to remodel a basement, put in a bedroom and a bathroom, and I wondered what the cost per square foot to do something like that and the labor component of that. Of that cost per square foot.
Okay, Carol, thanks for the call. Well, those are great questions. So basement finishing, you know, I would say that typically the bare bones is likely to cost starting around $50 a square foot. It's not unusual for our clients to end up spending anywhere from $100 to maybe in excess of $200 a square foot. And that's driven by a whole host of factors, often older homes that have limited ceiling space so that a lot of duct work and electrical work has to be completely redone to create a more spacious lower level. Putting in a bathroom down in a lower level, you're probably going to spend, depending on the details, whether it's just a powder room, that, you know, you may end up spending $10,000 to $15,000 having that installed. You know, you can easily spend twice to three times that for a full, full bath downstairs. But it's all going to depend on, the particular materials that you select. And then you ask about labor. I wouldn't be able to give you, because I just don't know how to translate the labor cost into square foot, because it all comes down to, what are we doing and what are we not doing? But I will say that professional labor is a big part of remodeling costs, and it's a big part of the costs that we're sharing with you and our listeners today. Because, you know, if you do things yourself and you have that skill and you have the time to give, I mean, that, you know, you are going to save a lot of potential expense. And it's just a question of whether or not you have that time and those skills to do it well.
Got to be anywhere between 30% and 50%, I would think, depending.
Yeah, and actually, I can thinking of it like that. That's a great point, Larry. It is, you know, when we think about our projects, it probably is every bit of
40%.
You know, yeah, 40% to 50%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, it becomes less of a percent when the materials themselves are higher end. But yeah, even when the material costs are rather frugal, you know, labor is every bit of 50% of the job. So.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of labor, I know good skilled labor, a person that is in the refinishing or, you know, who wants to learn those skills can make a pretty good living, can't they?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Larry, because we have an extreme shortage of people that want to be, you know, remodeling carpenters or just, you know, tradespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great opportunity. And people out there thinking about changing their profession, or maybe we have some folks listening who have a son or a daughter or a relative that they're, you know, wondering what they're going to end up doing. I would really encourage anyone who enjoys doing things with their hands to think about getting into the remodeling trades, because there's some great programs in the technical colleges in Wisconsin. We have an excellent construction and remodeling program here at Madison College. And there are similar programs around the state. And it, you know, you can make a solid living being a skilled carpenter in our line of work. You know, it's not unusual for our, you know, for people in this industry to be making anywhere from $50,000 to $75,000 a year plus benefits, and they are wearing a tool belt.
Yeah.
And that is a great, you know, middle class living, and there's tremendous satisfaction in the work that you do every day. You get to see, you know, what you've done. Mm-hmm. And in remodeling, which is somewhat unique, you're getting that feedback almost every day from your customer, because they're either there in the home while you're working, or they're coming home and they get to rave about the changes or the progress that has been made day to day. And of course, in remodeling, there are a whole host of other skills that we're looking for. You know, you have to be good at communicating and, you know, respectful of people's private space and keep things clean and all that. You know, and of course, if you want to show up and just build things every day, then probably being more in commercial or new home construction, you know, that's the typical kind of building trade thing.
Yeah.
And that's also a great
yeah.
thing to do in a place where people are needed. Remodeling is somewhat of a niche, but we're always looking for people with great pride in their work and that have those skills.
So. Yeah, there we go. And Carol, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it very much. Kate in Freedom, Wisconsin, we'll go to you now. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
Hi, so my husband and I had purchased a 1930s home a few years ago, and we had redone the insulation in the attic. We did spray foam, and all the windows were newer when we purchased the home. But our energy bills since being in this home have been astronomical compared to any other energy bill we've ever had. Just wondering what we might want to look at and evaluate to help bring those costs down.
What is, how do you heat? What do you use for heat?
We use LP.
LP, okay. LP is going to be a little higher just to begin with, I think, than natural gas.
Probably, yeah. I don't have a lot of experience with that. But so that's a great call, Kate. Thank you. You know, when you did the insulation work, did you have someone from Focus on Energy involved, or did you just hire a contractor that did the work?
I mean, we hired a contract. Oh, sorry. We hired a contractor that did the work. And I also just want to mention that the energy costs are high year-round. It's not just concentrated in the winter months when we're heating, and we do not have air conditioning that we're running in the springtime. Summer, I should say.
She needs to go to Focus on Energy, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would have a good evaluation done there, because you could have some sort of a load that, you know, something is
something's not right.
You know, eating up the electricity and running that meter. And, you know, I suspect a little sleuthing could be done, and maybe there's something that is running somewhere that is, you know, could be turned off. I mean, I'm not.
You might go, but if you go to focusonenergy.com, you're going to find somebody in your area who can do an energy audit, and that person's going to be able to sniff some things out, I think.
Yeah, and I would start by looking at some of the major appliances in the home, and, you know, that individual can really help you with that, because they can, you know, put them on the, you know, amp meter or the volt meter, the to you know, sleuth out how much each major appliance is consuming. And these are the sorts of things we would look at for year-round energy consumption, because, you know, your refrigerator, for example, you know, it could just be a really inefficient refrigerator, or maybe there's a auxiliary freezer or something, a second refrigerator that's eating up a lot of power. So
and the energy audit, they're going to find if there are leaks, if the home is leaky in any fashion, they're going to find that out. And, you know, $300 to $500 investment in a home energy audit, certainly.
Right. Though I, you know, based on just anecdotally, you know, it sounds to me like there might be an appliance or something something that's plugged into the electrical system that's just eating up power year round. And I'd be concerned.
Kate, does that help?
Yes, that does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Yeah, good luck. Call us back and let us know what you found out. Now I'm curious too. So whenever you do find out, give a call back when Chad's back, and we'd love to hear what happened. Alex in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Larry and Chad. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding a commercial building that I am looking to purchase. I went and looked at it, and part of the building sits on a slab, and part of it is basement, so it's got foundation walls. It's got the first main level and a second floor or second level. The problem on the second floor, you cannot really see it, but you can feel it when you're up there. There's a slight pitch to the floor, like it just doesn't feel right, doesn't feel straight. I looked at the foundation walls downstairs, and everything seems fine. The first level, the main level, is also level. It's not tilted like the one up there. Could that be a structural problem or just a design flaw when they built the building? And if it is a structural problem, apparently it's not in the foundation walls. What might cause that?
Well, maybe it was built that way.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting question. So have you purchased this building yet, or are you just thinking about it?
No, I'm just thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I went and looked at it, and that was the only concern. It just, you cannot even get dizzy being up there.
Okay.
Because of the pitch.
Right.
You can't see it. You can just feel it.
Sure. So I guess if it's something that you're really interested in and you think, you know, you might be interested in purchasing it, I would say that, hiring a good building inspector to look at it carefully, to figure out what's really going on. The two things that I could think of, and you've alluded to one of them, it could be that it was just built poorly initially, that in fact the foundation is sound, that the first floor is relatively level and all of that is as it should be, but that structure up on the second floor was improperly built. It could also be that it was underbuilt in a way that it is, sagging or has a bit of distortion in it that is giving you that perception of it being, wavy or out of level. And it could be that there are real problems with the structure, which, of course, you'd want to know before finalizing a purchase of it. So
get yourself somebody who knows what they're doing, a home inspector who knows what he or she's doing.
That's right. And when you're looking at a commercial building like that, I mean, that's a different group of folks. They're looking for different things. I mean, commercial structures are less common. You know, there are a lot more private homes, but commercial structures, there's certain things to look out for there. And there are some inspectors that specialize in that. So
there you go. Good luck, Alex. Thank you. And Lisa in Madison, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Yes, I have hardwood floors, and they're from the 60s, and they're in reasonably good shape considering how old they are. But there are shrinkage gaps on the ends of the boards, not necessarily on the width, the lengthwise, but on the ends of the boards where they butt up to each other. And I was thinking about redoing some of the floors just a little bit, resurfacing them. And I needed to know, is there something that I can use to fill in those gaps that's going to be more permanent?
Right. Well, that's a great question, Lisa. Thanks for calling. So occasional blemishes or cracks and things when a floor is completely sanded and refinished can be filled with a wood filler prior to being sanded and then refinished. But the problem with that is often, if the cracks are too large, that can deteriorate and the filler itself won't necessarily last as long because the wood tends to move around and the filler is rigid and it'll crack and come out. So it's an imperfect solution, but nonetheless, it might end up doing, it might allow you to be happier with the floor if that is done. Another thing that can be done is if truly the boards have shrunk over the years, you could have a professional do some kind of surgical patching of the floor with actual hardwood to fill in, cut out a larger space in some areas where the gap is too large for you to live with, and insert a new board that's essentially going to completely fill that space. But it's also by being a new board, that would be a minimum of a foot long, that's going to give you something that's going to last. The trick there is finding a wood that is close enough to the species of your existing hardwood floor that you're actually going to be happy with that patch and you're not going to notice it and go like, oh yeah, there's where they patch my floors. But that can be done. It's more expensive, certainly, but that might allow you to be happier with the floors and, once they're refinished, get another 20 years. And
Madison, Lisa's in Madison, and, those boards, she might be able to find some matches at a place like Restore.
That's true. And then there's a hardwood supplier on the east side that has, probably a dozen different species of red oak, for example. And they have, white oak and
pretty much anything.
Yeah. And if you sleuth it out, you might just find something that blends in beautifully.
Yeah. Good luck, Lisa. Thank you. And on to Tim in Sister Bay. Tim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good afternoon, Gary, Chad. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have a comment on the lady that called with the Phantom Road. I was listening to her story, and I had a situation. Given she was on LP, I thought maybe she had a well and a well pump. And I had a situation where my well pump capacity pressure dropped down below the level of the pressure switch on the pressure tank. So my pressure tank said, well, I'm shut off at 55 pounds, but my well pump only put out 50 pounds. So she wanted to just keep running. The switch controlling the well pump never shut it off.
That's
a good suggestion. Slim thing there, too, because if it's LP, she likely has a well.
Right. Right, it could be. And I mean, that's the thing. If someone gets in there that, you know, knows how to look for everything that's hooked up to the electrical system, I suspect that that's a pretty good candidate. And then there are a few other things that could also be contributing to it.
And thanks a lot, Tim, for calling. Ellen in Milwaukee emailed to say she and her husband are looking to do some pretty substantial renovations to their 1925 Milwaukee bungalow and are considering applying for an FHA 203K construction loan. They're wondering if you've had any experience working with these, negatives or positives. Also, do you recommend lenders who originate them?
Yeah, I'm unfortunately, if I've had clients that have been utilizing that program, I just haven't been aware of it. We don't tend to get too involved in the financing side of things.
Yeah.
So I'm not familiar with that particular program, but I would recommend talking to your local banker. And if you know, if your banker isn't able to give you some good information on that, I would talk to some other banks in the area.
Yeah.
I'm a, big fan of some of the local banks here in the Madison market, and they're really good at, helping homeowners finance or refinance and, do lines of credit, things like that. And so yeah. There are people that I could recommend locally, but I don't know about Milwaukee.
What about sort of, if you're thinking about the best remodeling choices in the last minute here or minute and a half, what and want to bring up the value of your home, probably one thing would be paint.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, certainly making things fresh and new. I mean, the fresh coat of paint, absolutely, is a great way to make a home more cheerful and new. And then, just making things easier to live in. Doorknobs that are levers instead of round knobs that are, as we get older, they're easier to operate. Thinking about safety and convenience. I mean, those are the things that really improve people's lives, I would say. And no dollar amount can be put on that, just being safer and more comfortable in your home.
Yeah. So makes good sense. Chad, do you have a website?
We do. Our website is chadsdesignbuild.com, and we've got a portfolio of projects and a lot of questions and answers, frequently asked questions. And, of course, NARI, all over the state of Wisconsin, a lot of great contractors and suppliers that can help you in the remodeling process, often are affiliated with the National Association of the Remodeling Industry and the various local chapters. And Milwaukee is the largest chapter in the nation, and Madison is either the third or fourth largest, and we're one of the smaller markets. So we have the largest percentage of remodeling professionals in the local chapter in the country here in Madison. So
very cool. Chad, always a pleasure. You're back January 10th. We'll do it all over again. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Larry.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, our guest. Thanks to him, and thanks to you for listening. Stay with us. What?